You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Stunning. I'll make it clear off the top. This will be one of the shortest post-game episodes of Locked On Rockets that we've ever had, because I don't have it in me to go on for very long tonight after what was one of the more deflating, at least regular season losses, in Houston Rockets franchise history. With that, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. The Rockets have 2 days off after Wednesday night's game against the Brooklyn Nets, and that's a good thing because the 145-142 loss in overtime is about as gutting as you'll ever see in a regular season NBA game. If any has the potential for a hangover effect, this would be the one, so hopefully the Rockets get a day to completely clear their heads, and then we'll see what happens when they get back in action Saturday night against the Lakers, also at home at Toyota Center. Fortunately, the Lakers won't have LeBron James, and the Rockets, by any means necessary, just need to get a win at this point to get the bitter taste out of their mouths. The Rockets, with this loss tonight, fall to 25-19. A very game Brooklyn Nets squad improves to 23-23. Now, to be clear, it wasn't all bad for the Rockets. They were without Clint Capela. They were without Chris Paul. Eric Gordon played but left early after just 21 minutes. James Harden had 58 points, 10 rebounds, the second highest scoring game of his storied career, and yet the Rockets lost a game. On face value, it doesn't seem that bad. Brooklyn's a good team, but in terms of the sheer shock value, this is stunning, because to put it in perspective, you've probably already seen it by now as you're listening to this podcast, but the Rockets were 682-0 in franchise history when leading by 6 or more points in the final 30 seconds of regulation over the past 20 seasons. That was the most wins without a loss by any team in that span. They're up by 6 with under 30 seconds to go in regulation. The Nets tied it. Spencer Dinwiddie just an incredible run, 9 points in the final 26 seconds of regulation. The Rockets completely gassed, shorthanded. James Dunnelly, who they signed off the scrap heap, all of a sudden was playing major minutes down the stretch of regulation and pretty much the entire overtime. Then, somehow, after blowing that late lead, Dinwiddie, with 9-26, almost doing the equivalent of what Tracy McGrady did, 13-35, nearly 15 years ago, somehow the Rockets got off the mat, got up by 7 with under 90 seconds left in overtime, punctuated by what we thought was a James Dunnelly dagger 3, and then they blew that one as well. And a lot of it, it's not even what the Rockets did wrong. Now, it's not to say they were perfect, but the Nets just made a lot of simply incredible shots. The 3 Dinwiddie threes at the end of regulation, they were all fairly well contested. The last one from about 35 feet. About the only flaw that I could point into the Rockets' late-game strategy was that they didn't foul Dinwiddie before he even reached half court. But I think it was tricky because typically you like to foul in the final 10 seconds. Well, he shot so early that I think it surprised the Rockets a little bit. And there also was no timeout, so they didn't discuss their strategy. So it's frustrating, but ultimately, even with that, it was tied and the Rockets had the ball. Harden missed his step back at the buzzer, and then you went to overtime. About the one flaw that I could find in the overtime strategy, when they were up 4 with 40 seconds to go, Jared Allen, who had just a fantastic game for the Nets inside, taking advantage of a Rockets team that's very small without Clint Capela, 20 points, 24 rebounds. He slipped to the rim, and Gerald Green, rather than just give up the layup, which was automatic for a guy that large, fouled him. Allen missed the free throw, but then the Nets ended up getting the rebound and ultimately getting an and one after that, leading to a 5-point possession that put them in front and ultimately proved to be the game's deciding points. So it should have been the Rockets ball up 2 with 40 seconds left. Instead, it was the Nets ball, and ultimately they went on to take the lead. So that was not a smart decision by Gerald Green, but ultimately the Rockets were gassed. And I think the reality is that overall, with the Rockets late in regulation and in overtime, without Eric Gordon, without Chris Paul, without Clint Capella, and with James Harden, even with all his brilliance, 58 points, 10 rebounds, clearly gassed because of the obscene workload that he had to take on. The Nets were a more talented basketball team, and on top of being more talented, they made some simply incredible shots. So it's tough to even be that mad as far as what the Rockets did. There were some lapses, but number one, some of them just come from the usual fatigue when you put that much mileage on your legs for a team that's already shorthanded to begin with. And secondly, towards the end of regulation, about their only mistake offensively, P.J. Tucker went 0 of 2 from the line with the Rockets up 1 and 15 seconds left. Then somehow, James Harden got an offensive rebound amongst the trees, got fouled, made both free throws, and then Dinwiddie stuck the three that sent it to overtime. Simply incredible shot-making by the Nets, a team that at 23-23, now on the inside of the Eastern Conference playoff picture, you tip your hat to them for playing well. For the Rockets, it's less about what they didn't do in terms of blowing those leads late, and it's more about the frustration of, effectively, the basketball gods being against you. Many shots, time after time after time. Think about the combination of, in a single game, blowing a stat, a six-point lead in the final 30 seconds when you were previously 682-0, 100% rate through 682 games over the last 20 years, and then, all of a sudden, compounding that by having a different seven-point lead that you built in overtime and then lose that one as well. Folks, for the Nets to do that twice, I don't care who you play, I don't care what the defense is, and some of those shots were pretty well guarded, it's tough to shoot that well against air. It is really, really difficult. So if you're the Rockets, you tip your cap. The Nets played a whale of a game, especially down the stretch, and they deserve to win. But for the Rockets, it is extraordinarily unlucky. And in a season where the margin of error is already as thin as it is, starting 1-5, 11-14. I know they've played better than that of late, even with this. They've won 14 of their last 19 games. Since the last loss, you could consider a collapse when they were up with just a couple of minutes left in that game at Dallas on around the 10th of December. During the good times, something I've said a lot on this program is certain games, certain inflection points are more than one out of 82. That's what this one is, because for the Rockets, trying to fight off that slow start, the bad injury luck, all the things that they've had to overcome this season, and yes, some of them are of their own doing, but you need to steal some games along the way to make up for that. And this wasn't even really a steal. This was a game that when you're up by double digits in the fourth quarter, you're up by 8 with 1:09 left, and you're up by 7 with under 90 seconds left in overtime. It's simply devastating to let either of those scenarios get away, let alone both in the same game, a game in which you're shorthanded, you expend so much energy. James Harden played 45 minutes, Austin Rivers 46, P.J. Tucker 42, Gerald Green 41. They fought their butts off, and to let it get away on top of what's already been a disappointing start to the season for the Rockets. I know they played better of late, but 25-19 certainly is not where they want to be. This one's tough. The good news is that they've already bounced back a lot this year. They've shown a lot of mental resilience climbing out of the holes that they already have. But at this point, I think you could see when James Harden went down the tunnel after the game and cursed and shoved the camera out of the way, this was not just another loss. This was simply crushing. This was historic in terms of the odds. When you combine two leads of that magnitude, first at the end of regulation and then in overtime, it's tough. The one silver lining, at least the Rockets have 2 days off before they return to play Saturday against the Lakers. They need them because this is the kind of loss that can stick with you for a long, long while. Now, when you consider the players that they were without, it's not that there were no positives from tonight. I thought they played hard. I thought they wanted the game. And ultimately, I don't think it's a disgrace from a talent perspective. The Nets simply are at least comparable, and I would argue without Gordon, probably a slightly more talented team. But for the Rockets, it's not just about what happens going into a game. Sometimes, depending on the circumstances, you can have feel-good wins, and you can have really depressing losses. This was one of the latter. And to me, before we go into any of the individual standouts who didn't play well, I think we have to acknowledge that this one is really, really tough. I'm sure the Rockets will get at least one off day between now and Saturday, and hopefully they use it to clear their heads, because more than anything else, I think mentally this is going to be a very, very tough one to overcome. Now, moving our way through the 3 points recap, led off by talking about just the sheer sense of devastation, blowing a lead of 6 points in the final 30 seconds, and the 7-point lead with another 90 minutes to go in overtime. Certainly some incredible shot-making by Spencer Dinwiddie, who had 33 points off the Nets bench, including 9 in the final 26 seconds of regulation. Jared Allen had 20 points, 24 rebounds, just so many big shots time and time again. Jamari Carroll off the bench, 22 points, 5 rebounds. The Nets played really well. They showed you why they've been a surprise team in the Eastern Conference. And they deserve this win, especially against the Rockets team without Clint Capela, without Chris Paul, and with Eric Gordon leaving early. The Rockets are not overwhelmingly more talented than the Nets. They look like it at times because James Harden scored 58 points, too short of his career high. But eventually he ran out of gas, and it's understandable. He wasn't quite the same in overtime, and the Nets somehow just kept making shots time and time again. As far as the Rockets, though, there are some common themes in that this was a game of runs. And aside from what happened late in overtime and at the end of the fourth quarter, the thing that really stands out when you look at this box score, the Rockets shattered the all-time NBA record, which they owned previously from December 2016, of attempted three-pointers. It was previously 61. Tonight, they tried 70. Now, there's an asterisk on that because it came with overtime, but they had broken the 61 mark even before they got to overtime. And it's reflective of just how dependent on the three they are. And the reason, of course, they're without Clint Capela. Tonight, the Rockets started Gary Clark at the center spot, went ultra small instead of Nene. As far as why they did that, I think, for starters, they played the majority of the time in Monday's win over the Grizzlies with Clark at the five rather than Capela. And the other factor is that if Nene, at age 36, is limited to about 15 minutes per game, he played 16 tonight, it doesn't really make sense to insert him at the start of the first and third quarters because you're deciding going into the game that that's when he's going to play. Whereas if he's limited 15 minutes off the bench, what makes more sense is that you mix and match, you see if he's got the hot hand or if the matchup is conducive to him, and then if he's not starting, it's easier to play him at the key inflection points, i.e. late in the fourth quarter, if he has it rolling or if there's a point in the game that you need more rim protection. If you are committed to only playing him 15 minutes a game, which is probably smart, and he's 36 years old, you are going to wear him down if you start him with that minutes limitation. So between that and the fact that Gary Clark played so well the other night as their five, the Rockets said, you know what, let's embrace it. But what happens when they don't have Clint Capela? Of course, we've talked a lot about the impact, defense, rebounding, how it makes them smaller, but I think that goes without saying. What the impact on the defensive end of the floor is, he's their only rim protector, and so naturally the Nets had easier driving lanes to the bucket, and that's going to be the case no matter who the Rockets put at the five spot. I don't think Marquese Chriss or Isaiah Hartenstein is going to be able to fix that very much. So you've got 15, 16 minutes from Nene, and other than that, they're going to be driving lanes. We know that, and the Rockets have been a bad rebounding team already. That's even with Capela. So certainly they're not going to magically become a better rebounding team than that. They were minus 10 tonight, and that's had 10 on the offensive side as well. So the impacts on the defensive side are relatively obvious. It's the offense that's more interesting because the Rockets, they've always embraced the three-point shot. But what it forces them to do now, without a roll man, they've gone from sometimes a pick-and-roll scheme and other times a pick-and-pop to pretty much a non-stop pick-and-pop. Because now the guys you have up front, P.J. Tucker, Gary Clark, whoever you play, even at the four, the five, there's no height. There's certainly no ability to finish in traffic. Even Nene, for the limited time, 16 minutes that he's out there, he's certainly not a lob threat. And generally speaking, it looks like the majority of the shots he gets are from the mid-range area. So it's a lot of isolation, spread the floor. We saw the Rockets have a lot of success with a James Harden-Austin Rivers pick and roll down the stretch in the fourth quarter. Should have been enough to get the win. But ultimately, because there's no lob threat, because there's no pick and roll, You're going to be taking more threes, and that's going to mean that you have a ton of variance and that you're going to have stretches where you can put up a ton of shots and points in a hurry, and there are going to be others where you go ice cold. And that, to me, I don't know that the end of the game was necessarily reflective of that. That was more just the Nets making an insane amount of shots. But throughout the game, why it felt like the Rockets could never truly get separation from Brooklyn, why the Nets just hung around close enough to potentially make those runs, it was because the Rockets didn't have any easy buckets. They went through extended dry spells on several occasions because without Clint Capella, there's no one to get the easier buckets, the putbacks, the lobs, if guys get a little bit tired or if the threes stop falling for a stretch. I know the Rockets had Capella in Game 7 against the Warriors, but to some extent, it's reflective of what happened when the Rockets didn't have Chris Paul to unlock that Golden State defense and then through the mid-range, and then you had that infamous 0 of 27 stretch, which I know shouldn't have been 0 of 27 because there were some blown foul calls, including one that should have been a 4-point play for James Harden. I know we can go on and on about that all night. But the reality is that when you take away both Chris Paul and Clint Capella, I know not every team is the Warriors, but when you take away the threat of Clint Capella as the role man, you take away Chris Paul's mid-range game, and then you don't have Eric Gordon down the stretch. He basically didn't play after the start of the fourth quarter. Even the Rockets' offense with James Harden scoring 58 can get predictable, and it's ultimately going to depend on are the threes falling or are they not. And generally speaking, even the stretches that they did have Gordon, it was streaky. And I think that's something you hope that some of that gap is bridged once you get Chris Paul back and he's able to be a mid-range threat. But ultimately, I think this is something that the Rockets are just going to have to weather in this stretch without Clint Capella, even independent of the end and how brutal that was. You're going to be streaky. You're going to have a lot more variance in individual games without Clint Capella, and ultimately you're going to have stretches where you're just laughably cold, and all of a sudden, even if things are going well, the other team can make up points in a hurry because you don't have that ability to get easy buckets. So to me, this was a game where we learned a little bit about what the impact of losing Clint Capella would be, certainly on the defensive end. I think that was easy to project. The Rockets were minus 10 on the glass. They weren't that great to begin with, and then they also didn't really have the shot-blocking presence, but that was predictable. We knew that. What I think we didn't necessarily know, but we saw tonight, especially with the transition to starting Gary Clark at the five, was how streaky the offense would become, and ultimately, that's one reason why the Rockets, even with Harden playing so well, were not able to pull away, and it's something that, again, other than getting more minutes out of Eric Gordon and ultimately a healthy Chris Paul back, I'm not sure how you fix it until Clint Capella gets back. It's just the reality of life without Clint Capella for the foreseeable future, and we'll have more on that on Thursday's show. Now, on the other side, as we finish up, we're going to talk about the one guy outside of James Harden, a part of their big four, if you will, who did play but left early, and that's the aforementioned Eric Gordon. Finishing up our podcast of Wednesday's inexplicable, incomprehensible 145-142 loss to the Nets in overtime, the Rockets blew leads of 8 points with a minute 9 left in regulation, 6 points with under 30 seconds left. They were previously 682-0 in franchise history over the past 20 seasons with a 6-point lead in the final 30 seconds. Then they somehow bounced off the mat, took a 7-point lead with under a minute and a half left in overtime, and lost that as well. Tip your hat to the Nets. They simply made a ton of shots, and aside from the incredible run they had at the end of regulation and at the end of overtime, what was so striking is that it wasn't like the Rockets were simply the more talented team, because especially with Eric Gordon leaving early, James Harden and I suppose Austin Rivers, who hit a few big shots late, the Nets just had as much, if not more talent, especially with Jared Allen getting 20 and 24 near the rim, and the Rockets, without the aforementioned Clint Capella, not having any sort of rim protector or athletic match for him around the bucket. And one guy that was key for the Rockets in building that lead, but ultimately could have had a role in not being able to close it out, certainly would have liked his free throws potential out there, and that's Eric Gordon, who in 21 minutes had 20 points, 6-11 from the field, 4-8 from three, a team best plus 20 in the plus minus. He looked electric, but ultimately left early. They called it knee soreness. I don't think it's anything shocking. As I said before Eric Gordon came back, he missed the last 8 games. When you watched Eric Gordon and Chris Paul over the past week going through pregame workouts, Chris Paul, to me, was the guy who looked to be moving better. It's just the nature of the injury with a hamstring strain in the case of Chris Paul and his age, there's so much of a recurrence risk that they're going to be uber cautious. With a contusion, a bone bruise to Eric Gordon, it's more an issue of pain tolerance. There's not the same risk as far as re-aggravation or making it worse, so they're more likely to err on the side of bringing him back early. And we saw both sides of it tonight. The upside is that when he played, he made some shots, he looked rested, and he looked like the guy who was the sixth man of the year 2 years ago and a finalist last year. Not the guy who's one of the worst shooters in the league based on his volume over the first 30 or so games of his season this year, shooting below 30% from the field and below 33% from the three-point arc. He showed you some very encouraging signs, and the Rockets were actually down 15 points late in the first quarter. It feels almost a lifetime ago because so many things happened, blowing the lead late in regulation and in overtime, but the Rockets were down 15 early in the game, and it looked like they just might not have it. James Harden was a minus 15. Then the Rockets went on a 17-2 run with Harden on the bench, and it was because, unlike this recent stretch, they had Eric Gordon and Austin Rivers to lead the offense in that time. And Eric Gordon actually had 8 straight points of his own late in the first quarter when the Rockets were down 15, almost single-handedly brought them back, restored energy to Toyota Center. So that's the upside. You can see that if he's healthy, there's a lot that he can bring to this team, especially in the minutes without James Harden, and especially if there's any sort of fatigue from James Harden. We've seen 2 of the last 3 games now. He was 1 of 17 from 3 in Orlando. Tonight he was 5 of 19. If his legs are starting to go a little bit off of this just Herculean, ridiculous, historic stretch that he's on now, 50-plus points in his last 2 games. He's getting to the line a lot, 21 of 23. He's getting to the rim more than ever, but the 3-point stroke isn't there. Well, maybe his legs are starting to fatigue a little bit. It would be understandable, and if he needs time to gather a second win, that's where you need your other playmakers, Austin Rivers, but primarily Eric Gordon and Chris Paul, who have been on the shelf. That's what you're paying them a ton of money to do, to step up. And the good news, Eric Gordon did that in the 21 minutes he played. The bad news is that he left early, and to some extent, it was reflected in the end of the fourth quarter and in overtime when the Rockets got a little bit predictable and stale offensively. And more than stale, I think it was just that they were tired and, quite frankly, they were out of options. They're very thin. They signed James Nunnally off the street. He made 3 three-pointers, effectively replacing Daniel House because of the contract dispute. We covered that a lot on Tuesday night's show. And Nunnally, again, he hit 3 three-pointers, including one that should have been the dagger with a minute and a half left in overtime. I thought he played well, but he's certainly not a shot creator. Austin Rivers played a team-high 46 minutes, but he shot 5 of 14. He's been dealing with some soreness in his fingers over the past week on his shooting hand. Even at his best, I don't think that he's really a top option as far as a creator. He's more a secondary type guy. Eric Gordon and Chris Paul are guys who can be trusted to run your offense through, at least at times. And James Harden's taken on a huge load over the past month. He scored 58 tonight, but even that can't last forever. He needs some help, and I think part of the frustration we saw from Harden after the game, certainly it's the stunning nature of the loss that plays a role in it, but I think too, it's he gave everything he could, his heart and soul, even came up with a rebound amongst the trees in the final 15 seconds of regulation when Tucker went 0 of 2 from the line, and it still wasn't enough for the Rockets to get that victory. So the good news is that Eric Gordon played pretty well, and after the game they just called it precautionary soreness, and I think that's to be expected. They know he's not 100%. He still looks like he's in a little bit of pain. We saw him flexing the knee at times, just an issue they don't think he can really make it worse, and it's something that eventually they think he'll be able to just play through. He will get a week off at the All-Star break, not too far away. So it's the good news and the bad news. The good is that we saw in 21 minutes, uber efficient, 20 points, better than 50% shooting, 50% from three. We saw what Eric Gordon can give you. The bad is that, well, you need more than 21 minutes of that, and you also need more than 0 from Chris Paul. So it's sort of reflective of the season as a whole, and if not the season as a whole, certainly this loss tonight, in that there are a lot of high points, there are moments where they take your breath away, you say, wow, and there are other moments where you wonder what could have been. And ultimately for Eric Gordon, the good news is that you see what he can give you if he's right, if the stars align down the line, and where he fits with this team. The downside is that they're still not there yet, and based at least in part on him playing just 21 minutes tonight, not being out there late in the fourth quarter in overtime, The Rockets let another one go. It's their fourth loss in the last seven games, and they fall 225-19 on the year. I know they had the slow start. I know there was a hangover effect. I know there's a ton of extenuating circumstances. I know they've played better lately. I know they're going to get Chris Paul back. I know Eric Gordon's going to play more minutes than 21. But at this point, your margin of error, it's shrunk significantly. The line in the Western Conference between really the 3 seed and the 9 seed is a whopping 4 games at the moment. And the difference in the 3 and the 7 seed is 2 games. In a Western Conference that's so jam-packed and a season for the Rockets that's already over halfway gone, you can't give too many of these away. And I don't know that the Rockets necessarily gave it away tonight. It was more the Nets taking it. But either way, it's a game the Rockets should have won. They didn't. And in a season that's been about what should have been, but the reality is not matching that, it just feels like more of the same. Hopefully the Rockets can turn the page. They've got a couple of days off. And again, it's not that they're without any positives. We'll talk more about those in the days ahead because we are a daily show here at Locked On Rockets. But for now, I don't want to sugarcoat it. This really, really stings. Don't know what else to say, so I'll leave things right there. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. If you made it through this incredibly depressing episode, I thank you because, quite frankly, if I were in your shoes, I would not want to listen to anything about the Rockets right now. I'm only doing it because, well, as a service to my listeners, I want to be there for better or for worse, and certainly this is one of the worst times. So if you did listen to all of that, thank you so much. Hopefully we'll have more happy news to discuss in the days ahead. If you want more content before then, though, as always, best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And also don't forget our Locked On NBA Net handle, which is on Twitter and Instagram curated feed from our Locked On Podcast Network experts across the association, just like myself. If you want to see what they're saying in other NBA cities about their teams or about the Rockets prior to Houston playing those teams in the days ahead. For today, this will be where we break it. Again, I do have a couple of more positive shows in the days ahead. Got a couple of nice interviews lined up on Thursday and Friday, so stay tuned for that. But for now, this is where I'll go because I don't want to bum y'all out or myself out any longer. So once again, the extraordinarily unlucky and unhappy final. Nets 145, Rockets 142 in overtime at Toyota Center. Nets improved to 23-23. Rockets fall to 25-19. This one really, really sucked. On that note, tomorrow certainly can't be worse, so make the best of the rest of your day, and please come back soon for hopefully more happier and more optimistic episodes. Certainly can't be much more pessimistic than that, right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.